It's a True Faith podcast. I'm Alex Hayes, joined by Ben Wade. Saturday morning after the night before, Newcastle United 1, Leeds 1. A really good night at St James's Park, despite the deflating end to it. We've got a short podcast for you here, me and Ben, followed up by 15 minutes from Mike Crean on Ipswich, who's an Ipswich fan. I'll be seeing him at Ipswich on Monday, good friend of ours. Most of you who listen to the show.
I was going to say, some people might remember him.
Some people might remember him. He's also part of his own football podcast, Football Bloody Hell, on the Premier League every Monday night. Look it up. So me and Ben will talk to you for a little bit now about Leeds, and we'll do a longer podcast after Ipswich next week, kind of looking back at the two games. But Ben, most definitely...
I'll just say, I'm a little bit disappointed he's not on the phone for the first half hour of this podcast.
Just listening in. Are you still there, Mike? I'm still here. Blast from the past, that. Right. Ben, 2 points dropped, definitely.
Oh, massively. I mean, they've had one chance, I think, in the first half where they've hit the bar and then Dollars made a really, really good save.
Great save, yeah.
But it was a speculative effort, edge of the box. I mean, if he's got a fair play, if he scores that, it's just a great strike, but obviously they didn't. But that is literally all they've had in 90 minutes. Unbelievably dominated the game, and just a really, really frustrating, obviously, end to it. When you think, I mean, Rob Green's had probably the best games of his career. That's the sort of form, I guess, that he's got international caps based on. And he was the difference between the two teams yesterday, really.
Yeah, I mean, even for our goal, he did a great job of clawing it back from behind the line. That would have been, it wasn't a save, but a great attempt, because that was a definite, look for all the world like he was gonna burst the net themselves with the header. Team selection wise, we started again with Mbemba, which was a shock for myself. But for all my concerns and other people's concerns about Chris Wood, dominating us aerially, it just didn't happen. And Woods just was not in the game. Until the 95th minute, 96th minute possibly.
Yeah.
And fair play, and obviously Isaac Hayden. Then I thought Isaac Hayden was absolutely fantastic. And for all the talk of poor performances recently, despite some wins, I think his loss, has been most keenly felt by the side.
Definitely, I think we've spoken about it a few times. He just brings us something different. Element of the game, to the performance. I mean, his energy is brilliant. Obviously, he was winning the ball back all the time. He's really good tackler. That's probably the biggest difference between him and Colback, is he can he's brilliant at sort of tackling, just winning the ball back in positions where you wouldn't think people could do. Whereas Colback, from positions that seem to be you can't lose the ball, he seems to just foul people all the time. But I think as well, he seems to be much sort of more accomplished player on the ball, in terms of he's very tidy on it. And I think he just, I've said it sort of a few times on the podcast this season, I just think he will look a much, much better and more balanced team when he's in it.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. And I really hope we keep him fit until the end of the season. Just a little bit on Colback, I've seen him get a lot of stick. Came on and gave away that foul. Number one, I thought I was screaming foul him, screaming. Because we should have been able to defend that situation. The ball should never have come out the corner. And I know it's hard, because even, I'm there, we were standing up at the end, and you're there was a chance when, Mitrovic got the ball past one of his defenders, and then Yedlin tried to play in Diarmé. It should never have happened. I mean, the Leeds couldn't get the ball off. Where Mitrovic was doing fine. Why we decided to try and score again, in injury time, at the end of a game we've dominated, was really poor from the lads. I thought they were fantastic last night as a group, really good set of lads. But I just thought that was really poor from them, and there was no need to try and score another goal at the end there. And I know it's easy saying, in hindsight now, but that's the second goal we've conceded this season in injury time at home. I'm thinking of QPR. It was the same at QPR. We lacked the experience to see that game out. And the more frustrating thing about this one, QPR, was number one, the performance; number two, the relevance of the game and the part of the season that we're in. but we had the ball in the corner. I could have lived with it if Mitrovic, you know, gave away a foul or we gave away a throw-in, or we contributed to them getting the ball in our part of the pitch. I don't blame Jack Colback at all. He did the right thing, and we actually defended the free kick fine. It's really frustrating.
Well, that was the thing of the initial. The only criticism I would say of him was that he called back. He should have fouled it. If he was going to foul him early.
Yeah.
Because he let them get into a position where one ball could get into the box. And obviously, with our frailty is like set pieces, defending set pieces. If he'd have just fouled him like 10, 20 yards before, that ball isn't on. They can lump the ball up, and they're only gonna get it sort of like to maybe halfway in our half. But unfortunately, he's let them get into our half, whereby then they can get the ball into the box. As you say, it's a bit harsh to sort of say that contributed to the goal, because at the end of the day, we cleared the initial one. And it was just tired legs, sort of. No, we didn't get out of them quickly enough after that.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about the goal. It was farcical, really. First, I can't remember who the other player, Big Mo Diame, came on. You know, he should have.
Diame Yedlin.
He should have got closer to the player who put the ball in. He beats Yedlin, and then there's no one next to him. Someone else is switched off. Lascelles is in no man's land. Chris Wood's unmarked in the 95th minute. If we'd have cleared that ball, you know, it's hard, because I'm thinking, should Diame give away the foul? Because if he gives away the foul, in hindsight, yes, he should have given the foul, definitely, because we would have been at least a little bit organised in the box.
Yeah.
And then if he gives away the foul, we'll concede. We're stood here on Saturday absolutely slating for giving away a foul. but that's the fine lines. You know, he's no good at that in that part of the pitch as well. But I thought it was poor from him. I thought it was poor from Yedlin, and obviously desperately poor from Lascelles, who'd had an excellent game, had a fantastic game. And that's the thing about a few of our young lads at the moment. I mean, you look at that back line, Lascelles 22, Mbemba 22, Paul set piece dumb at 19, allegedly. Now he's 25. the way people go on, now he's 25, but he's still young. Dollar 26. Your only kind of senior player there is Vernon, I think, who's 27, 28, who was excellent, by the way. For all the criticism he's picked up on this podcast, Vernon Eater was superb yesterday, in my opinion. But yeah, just so naive at the end, and to allow, you know, to allow Chris Wood that time and space in the box, and to give Leeds a point. They'll have lost games, you know, heavily this season, Leeds, and not played as badly as that, or not being as dominated as comprehensively as that. So massively frustrating. But how did you think Mbemba did then? Because, you know, that was a surprising thing. But I thought he had one of his best games for Newcastle.
Yeah, I thought he had a really good game. I mean, again, he showed sort of a couple of glimpses of sort of the worries that we saw in Sheffield, whereby I think there was I think he gave away a throw-in or something like that in the first half, whereby he was trying to shield it out, and it's just that he did it against Sheffield. Obviously, it didn't come to anything in that instance as well, but just you can't be dawdling on the ball like that. You've just got to get it away. But other than that, I thought he was excellent. Again, sort of the strength we've been talking about, he was nicking the ball off players. He's always really positive in bringing the ball out as well, which is sort of one of his best traits, I guess, in what I would put why I think he should be sort of normally. He's really good at bringing the ball out. There's a few times where he just a little sort of drop of the shoulder, almost Queen Street Cowley-esque, just ran past a player, and just it opens the game up. And when you've got a defender like that can carry the ball out, then it just takes that brush off the likes of Shelby or Hayden or whoever it is in midfield. Like, because generally they'll pull midfield quite apart if you've got a defender that can beat the striker, then it opens up the game and puts them under a bit of pressure. So I think that's something that will come in useful next season if teams try and play like a pressing game where they're trying to mark Shelby out of the game.
Yeah.
But just defensively, I mean, as you said, I was a bit surprised when they went with him, because obviously we'd seen Stephen Fletcher have quite a good game against us last week, dominating at Were really, both him and Lascelles. And I thought Chris Wood, that's like his bread and butter, in it, the ball's in the air. But as you said, he just didn't get a sniff. And I mean, a lot of that was due to, I think, the way Leeds played. I mean, I think they were pretty poor. But also, I mean, when they did get the ball up to him, they were times where we're next to the ball back off him, and I think he's had a really, really solid game after quite a shaky one. It's good to see him getting a bit of confidence back. You didn't see sort of the miscommunication as well that we've seen a few times this season, too often yesterday.
Yeah.
And he's only played a handful of games. He's played, what, 3 or 4 games, I think, up to now. You're going to obviously come in and be a little bit shaky, maybe, you're not match prepared, are you, when you've played that little. So I think it's just building that confidence back up, and as well as, like, just the comfort levels with the back four as well. You're going to get better and better the more games you play together. It'll be interesting. I'd like to see, obviously, when Clark comes back in. I think he's probably not going to, I don't know if we're going to see him any time this season, but those two going forward, I think, would be my choice for good when we go up next season.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Clark is absolutely superb in the air as well, whereas Mbemba struggles a bit. I know you've not seen highlights, Ben. I caught the very brief ones on the Sky Score Centre app. The penalty decision, I think it's at 0-0 on Mbemba, is yet another example of absolutely disgraceful officiating at this level. The lad makes no attempts.
I did say that one, actually. We're in the Labour Club after the Habs. They put up a couple of, it was the end of the, like, obviously the
coverage. It's a red card. It's a red card.
Like, completely, like, stop the goal scoring opportunity, because he's going to get there and basically got an open goal in front of him.
You know, I used to, last season, the relegation season under McLaren, I was bored about talking of injured players. I'm bored about every week on the podcast talking about dog shit referees who are just fucking rubbish at everything they do in life. Like, they're just rubbish. I'm sick of it. Like, hey, last night I looked at the referee. It's like there's like a, you know, like when you know allegedly when you drop stuff on the floor, there's like a 5 second rule. It's like the referee and linesman look at each other for 5 seconds, and if both of them bottle it, they just crack on. They're like, it's just like, well, 1, 2, 3, 4, no pen, like, just make a decision. Like, you're being paid to watch the match. If you compare it to Huddersfield's pen, which was an off the ball incident, the ref didn't see it, and you've got a lad who's going to knock the ball in the back of the net, and a Leeds player, wrong side, the Leeds player is the wrong side of Mbemba. How can you not give a penalty in that situation? I mean, it may have changed the final result, it may not have changed the final result. It's just infuriating, Ben, we'll have to crack on. Mitrovic last night, the source of a lot of debate today on social media. Some people absolutely buzzing, saying he's fantastic. Some people saying, like Alan Shearer, I thought he was poor. Where do you stand on his performance?
I mean, I wouldn't go as far to say he was fantastic. At the end of the day, me and Si were talking about it last night, actually, after the game, and just saying, like, I thought he had a decent game. He had a good impact. Obviously, he's got the assist for the goal as well. He's peeled off the back of the defence and put a good ball back in for Lascelles for his goal. But again, it's just that lack of a threat. Like, we've said it a few times, when does he ever look like he's going to score a goal? Like, I don't remember him. Like, there was one chance that he did make of his own.
Yeah, that was good.
His own making, which was really good. Yeah, where he lobbed it over green and then defenders had to come flying in and make a last ditch headed clearance. But other than that, like, he's not. I don't remember him having any other opportunities to score, and you just think either his positioning is rubbish, so he's not getting in the right position, he's not in the box. But also, it's just, I don't know, like, there's times where he just seems like he's a little bit lazy in terms of getting back into position for attacks. Like, he always seems to be offside, like walking back out, and I don't know, I just think it's a little bit frustrating. You don't see we're scoring a lot of goals with him in the team, whereas you think the likes of Gale, when he's in the team, he's always like panicking defenders and making dangerous runs that, okay, it doesn't necessarily always come off, but it's making the defenders think. With Mitrovic, you just look at them, they're a lot easier game for the defence, they're not put under the same sort of pressure, and it's very predictable, like they know what he's going to do, I think. So I thought he did have a good game yesterday. I'm not going to sort of slag him for that. I thought he was solid, but it's just, again, it's the worry is he lacks a goal threat. Like, I don't know how, like, he's going to score goals.
Yeah, I mean, for me, if this is the start of something, then I'm happy. If that was a performance, because it was, he did play well. I thought Shields.
And it's on the back of a really good like impact off the bench against Sheffield.
So yeah, if he can build on this at Ipswich, and he deserves to keep his place for Ipswich, then great. Yeah. I get what Shearer's probably getting at was the times in the second half which were infuriating when he'd either beaten a man, he'd won the ball in the air, he'd got past them, and then he throws himself down and appeals to the ref and gets nailed because it's a dive. And then it's like, no, Mitro, you've done the hard work. You've done what a lot of players can't do. You've got the ability to crack on and try and get a goal. Like you say, it's like I wouldn't say he's not asked about scoring because that would be ridiculous, but he's certainly kind of as bothered at times about pissing off. Did you see Rob Green's reaction?
I said at the time, I was like I went wild at
why?
Apparently, Paul next to me said apparently he'd done something for our goal, I missed that.
Why does Mitrovic get himself in these predicaments during games? But you know, it was a good performance. I think he played 90 minutes, which is a big thing for me. Him getting the full 90 at home under Rafa has not happened very often at all. So 90, another 90, you know, 90 minutes under the belt. Let's get on to Ipswich and let's get him on the score sheet. I thought the big difference was the effort. He put a lot of effort in, which is good to see. And it's sad that we haven't always been able to say that this season. But you know, something to build on.
That's the thing. It was a positive performance. And as you say, it's just building on the right thing. And he seems to at least be getting the idea of what they expect from him in terms of getting himself. Making himself a nuisance, which is what he's best at, really. He is a good target man as well. I think when the ball's up and when he's focused on actually winning the ball, he does win a lot of headers and he can bring the ball down and he can bring other players into position. But as we've said far too many times, he doesn't do that. But hopefully the penny's dropped and he's starting to realise the impact he can have. I mean, he won some brilliant headers yesterday when he got away there. Really good attacking positions, and I think it's just as you say though, he just needs to, I think, prioritise scoring a bit more. Like, you get the feeling like he's more interested in the build up play a lot of times. Yeah. He wants to come drop deep, into the number 10 role and hold the ball up. Really, you need him on getting forward a bit more and getting into the danger areas where he's going to get goals from. But I think it was encouraging, and I think the signs there, hopefully now that he's getting his head around what he needs to do for the team. And as you say, I think that 90 minutes is a massive sort of nod to the progress, and I think that was as well like reward for having a good game yesterday.
Yeah, and now we're 8 points clear with 4 games to go, technically 9 points with a goal difference. Huddersfield can get a maximum of what they're on, 77, so they can get a maximum of 5 games, 15, 92. You know, to get the 92, to get the 91, we need 2 wins from our last couple of games. I mean, Huddersfield got Derby away, hard game. You know, if they lost that, it would be 89, so it would be 2 wins. Do you see the 2 wins coming next 2 games, Ipswich and Preston?
Yeah, I mean, I think Ipswich, I mean, they've obviously just worked beating Burton yesterday with a 2-1, but I think all we've heard all season from Mike is how poor they are. When you think back, we've taken the best player off them in Darryl Murphy, who couldn't even get on the pitch yesterday. I think that sort of spells out the gulf between the two teams. So I think I'm fully expect to get the win. The Preston one would be interesting. I mean, obviously, with they seem to have got battered yesterday off Huddersfield, but we're still in a position there to potentially get something out of the game, were it not for that the penalty at the end. So it could be a tight game. And I mean, I think the game down there at Deepdale as well was fairly a tight one as well. I remember you obviously went to that one. Mitro got two, didn't he?
Did I?
It could be sort of another scrappy affair, but as you say, I think just getting points on the board. I mean, even the points at this stage draws on bad results, obviously. So, providing if we beat Ipswich and we'll get a point against Preston, it wouldn't be the end of the world.
That just about does it for today. Thanks, Ben. I just want to say it was a really good night to be at St James's Park, despite the last minute goal. Great atmosphere. The flags were mint.
It was just as you say, I mean, again, I'd enjoyed the Sheffield Wednesday game in terms of the, I thought that the fans were really good, and like, other than that, I mean, the performance was absolutely atrocious, obviously, but like, it seems to be like the people are sort of switching on to the positive impact they can have, and I thought again yesterday was brilliant. A lot of noise, it was really loud, a lot of people sort of singing, and it was a really good positive atmosphere, and obviously you saw that was probably the best 90 minutes, well, 93 minutes, whatever, that we've played at home, I think, this season. It was a brilliant performance. It was just a shame that we've let ourselves down at the end there, but I think that there's a lot of positives we can take from that. I mean, obviously, it's gutting to lose it the way we did, and it was a bad mistake, but we shouldn't forget how much, like, we're battered them, we've dominated them for 90 minutes, and these are the third or fourth best team in the league, so I think there's a lot of positives to take from it.
Indeed. Okay, thanks for listening, everybody. Now I've got my chat with Mike, who's an Ipswich fan. And as I said, we'll probably look to do something middle of next week, maybe Wednesday, Thursday, longer podcast, looking back at these two games and looking ahead at the rest of the season. So, Ben, thanks for your time, and speak to you soon. I'm joined now by Michael Crean, a long-time True Faith NUFC contributor when we were a Premier League side, and I'm sure he will be again next season. Also host of his own podcast, Football Bloody Hell, which is available every Monday night at all the usual places on iTunes. Thoroughly recommend you check that out. Morning, Mike. It's not been the best season for Ipswich, has it?
No, slight understatement there, Dodds. It all seemed to go tits up as soon as we got rid of Daryl Murphy and sent him your way and completely failed to replace him. So there's a lot of bitterness and anger around the place at the moment, which I'm sure you'll probably see come Monday when you come down to our place.
Yeah, and obviously McCarthy's been there a few years now. Is it just gone stale, or has he started doing things, you know, has he stopped doing the things that made him fairly successful previously?
Well, stale is probably the right word, to be honest. It's a difficult one, because if you look at us and how we rank in terms of spend in the league, we're about, you know, rank about 16th place in terms of the money that we spend on transfers, getting players in. So where we are sitting 17th at the moment, in that scheme of things, it's possibly not a massive shock. But I think the thing is, he came in several years ago and originally saved us from relegation, and then from there, every season there was progress. We finished. Got three top 10 finishes in a row, got in a playoffs a couple of seasons ago on a shoestring budget, and seventh last season. But this year we've just seen far too many draws, 16 draws this year. The problem is more the fact when we got into the playoffs and weren't playing the most beautiful football, but you're winning games and doing what you can with the resources available. But now we're not getting the results, we're not winning games, and there's a lot of negativity around the club built from the fact that it's a lot of, doesn't seem to be much of a plan around the club as a whole, and McCarthy is just one part of that. But to be perfectly honest, a lot more of the frustration increasing over the last few months has been towards the owner, and the whole strategy behind the football club as a whole. I think this season is just one season on top of many others. We've been in the Championship, you know, it's 15, 16 years now. The longest serving club in the league, which is our proud title. And I think really it's an accumulation. I think if we'd been regularly successful in the years beforehand, this season you could take this season as a bit of an outlier, and people would take it on the chin more. But the fact we've had so many years, and the large majority of those years have been spent battling for 14th place in the league, there's a lot of inertia around the club, and as I say, a lot of the negativity now, obviously a lot directed towards McCarthy, but a lot of it directed towards the board and the owner now more than anything else.
Yeah, not the best. And in terms of next season, is it very much apparent that McCarthy will be gone, or is there still some chance that he'll be in charge?
Well, he's got a year left left on his contract at the end of this season, and then the club's got an option of a further two beyond that, which I think would be a suicidal PR move to activate. But my thoughts were that he'd probably make a decision to go at the end of the season. I can't see the owner getting rid of him. For starters, I don't think that they'll be able to afford to pay him off for the year, and then go out of the process of finding a new manager. Obviously, when you get a new manager in, there's more pressure to invest. The point is that the Marcus Evans, the owner, is not pumping the money into the club. He pumped in money under Roy Keane and Paul Jewell, gave them money to spend, and of course they frittered it away. You know, for that reason, I can't see him getting rid of McCarthy. So it would be down to McCarthy, you know, wanting to head out himself. He's just said this week, in the last couple of days, that he has no intention of leaving, and that he's going to stick around. So I can see next season as being more of the same, to be honest. There's just not a desire within the club, or, you know, to move things forward. And as long as we keep ticking over, I think the owners are happy to keep the status quo. So it's a bit depressing, and I'm sure you'll come into what will be quite a negative atmosphere. It was at Fulham away on the weekend, and I remember turning to my mate just before the kickoff, and I said, as soon as we concede a goal, which will happen, as soon as we go behind, it will just the whole stand will turn into you know, anti-Ball, anti-McCarthy chants, and that's exactly what happened. And it's likely to be the same on Monday, I'm afraid. Not that should bother you, but I think a lot of fans are just struggling to see the light at the end of the tunnel, and I think it's looking like it will be a very similar season next year. Because there's just no plan and no investment in the club, and when you look at the money and the resources that the large majority of the rest of the league have, it's hard to see us doing anything more than a mid-table finish or low mid-table finish get next year.
What is it with these managers who determine their own fate? Bloody Arsene Wenger, Mick McCarthy. Arsenal fans don't know how good they've got it.
We'll do a swap deal. Arsenal fans want a bit more steel. We'll give McCarthy, and we could do with a bit of football being played every now and then. So we'll take Wenger. I wouldn't be too happy with that. I'm happy with that. Yeah. But it's I think it's more a convenient financial, you know, the situation for the club that McCarthy will stay. It's just a fact that there won't be the money to invest in getting a new manager on board and get rid of him and turning things around. But despite the fact that season ticket sales that go down year on year, we're averaging around 15,000 now in a 30,000 seat stadium. So it's pretty cavernous and a pretty depressing experience going to home games now. But it's I can't see much changing on that front, to be honest, unless someone comes in and takes the club over, which is not a very good proposition for a new owner coming in and taking on the debt that we have. But it's going to be more of the same, I think. So look forward to next season as ever.
So where the fans, you know, obviously this is a hard question because you've talked about new ownership potentially. Where do fans see Ipswich in the natural order of things? I ask this to every fan who comes on the podcast. Do you see yourselves as maybe a top 10 championship club? Do you see yourselves as a top 6 club, bottom 6 Premier League club? Where do Ipswich fans think the club should be in the pecking order of English football?
Everyone always wants to see us challenging around the top of the championship. I think there's an acceptance that we won't always be, you know, we won't be a regular Premier League team. But you always certainly want to see you around the playoffs, challenging to get up. But the problem has been that we've spent so many years now just loitering around 13th, 14th position, where you get into the last 8-9 games of a season, and more often than not, you have absolutely nothing to play for. You're in no danger of going down, no danger of going up. and there's just nothing riding on a lot of games. And see, now we're 9 points clear of the relegation zone. We'll be safe now, but there's an urge just to have a bit of excitement going into the last six games of the season. Obviously, we had that few seasons ago, got in the playoffs, and that was a marvellous season, but it was very much an outlier and a one-off, really. And that's where a lot of the fans want to see us, around the playoffs and challenging towards the top of the league. But now it's getting increasingly difficult. If you look at so many clubs in the league now have been in the Premier League in recent years, or either that or have investment coming into them, and we just don't have it. We can't afford. We very rarely spend transfer fees on players, and every year our best player is a loanee, which is no way of sustaining things. I mean, our best player this year, Tom Lawrence, on loan from Leicester, he's head and shoulders above the rest of the team. You can see online just so many absolute worldies he scored this season. He's just carried the team as an attacking threat. But then you can enjoy that on a one-off and enjoy watching him play. But you think, well, what's going to happen next season? You can't sustain that on having your best player every season. Last season it was Ryan Fraser at Bournemouth. But there's no way of us signing them the next season. You've just got to enjoy them while they're here for the year. But it's not sustainable at all. And then next year you look for another loanee or free transfers coming in. And it's I think that's the problem. There's no sustainable plan for the future. You look at our squad now; it's probably a lot bigger than it has been in recent years. But we just don't have the quality there. And the lack of replacements for Daryl Murphy is a perfect example of that, really. You know, we've got Leon Bestian on the free, which has not worked at all. Just trying to put plasters over the gaps, and it's really starting to come undone.
And finally, do you think the likes of the success of Huddersfield Leeds to an extent has kind of made things worse for McCarthy? Because I don't think either of those clubs has paid much at all, or if any, transfer fees this season. Yet they seem to find themselves, you know, playing attacking football, playing good football in the playoffs. Is McCarthy perhaps underachieving, or you know, is it very much a case of he's been dealt a shit hand year after year, and he's actually doing a reasonable job?
Every year there are going to be clubs, aren't they? Even likes of Preston or Barnsley have done well given the resources they've had this year. There's always going to be clubs that you can put yourselves up against and say, why are we doing that? But I think over the few seasons before, we've probably been given the budget sort of overachieving, and this season has been very poor. And McCarthy is certainly he's underperformed this year, and it's very much a case now that when it's not going well, his football and his sort of approach to the fans as a whole is combative, to say the least. Yeah. And when you're winning games and you listen, we had Murphy last year. And you can play long balls, and he will hold it up. He will be something to hit. He will bring others into play. This season, we don't have that at all. Yet, we still persisted with the same tactics and trying to lump it without getting your head up. And we give possession away so easily. And it's a failure to change that. And on top of that, he's frustrated a lot of fans with his comments in the media. As you will know from hearing some of his press conference here and there, they get picked up. But he's just very, it's the typical Yorkshire approach. You know, I say what I see. You know, I say what I find. And it's a lot of the time he's been harking back to what he's done in previous season, which was a fantastic job. But at the moment in time, he's just served to drive a bigger divide between him and the fans, and there's a hell of a lot of negativity now, and people are much less willing to appreciate the financial struggles that we have, and the fact that he, to some extent, he's got a hand, at least one hand tied behind his back. I think this season he's certainly underperformed, and the way he's handled that has done him absolutely no favours, and made the situation more difficult for himself as well as for the fans that have to go and watch that every week.
Mike, thank you very much for your time. Wish you all the best for the rest of the season, and I'm sure we'll speak to you again soon.
Indeed. Well, yeah, look forward to seeing you on Monday, and I'm sure you'll probably have a fairly fruitful visit to Portman Road.